You're very welcome back to Morning Ireland. There is no end in sight to the suffering of the people of the Middle East. Israeli attacks continue on Gaza. Over 40,000 people there are dead. And over the weekend, both Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah threatened to increase their cross-border attacks. At the same time as the United Nations was describing the situation as catastrophic and its Secretary General saying he feared that Lebanon could be transformed into another Gaza. Lebanon has become the focus of Israel's increased attacks since last week, after thousands of Lebanese people were injured and 39 were killed when pagers and walkie-talkies that they were carrying exploded with no warning across the country. Up until then, the two had been involved in relatively sporadic cross-border attacks since last October, but that increased significantly over the weekend with hundreds of rockets and missiles being fired in both directions, and which killed a senior Hezbollah commander along with over 40 others, according to Lebanese officials. Speaking this morning, spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Forces, Daniel Hagari, said they would continue their strikes against Hezbollah, and he urged Lebanese civilians to move to safety.
We are operating to achieve all of our goals of the war in Gaza, to dismantle Hamas and bring back home all the hostages, and in the north, to repeal the threat posed by Hezbollah and enable the residents from the north of Israel safely to return to their homes. The IDF is operating and will continue to operate in defense of the citizens of Israel wherever required.
Well, we are joined now from Beirut by journalist Karim Shahayeb. Karim, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. In relation to the Israeli attacks on Lebanon over the weekend, how much damage has been caused?
Good morning. Yes, I mean, the attacks over the weekend have been extremely, you know, have represented a massive, you know, scale up in attacks, both in the number of strikes that took place and, of course, you know, the number of people wounded as well. You know, on Friday, an airstrike in Beirut, it was the deadliest since 2006, which was the last war between Hezbollah and Israel. Death toll at the moment, 45 people, and there are some people still trapped under the rubble. There were Hezbollah members in the building, but there are also a sizable number of civilians as well. And then, you know, following that, you know, we're seeing lots and lots of Israeli airstrikes in southern Lebanon and eastern Lebanon in particular, and in much higher numbers. Israeli military says they've been hitting, you know, hundreds of Hezbollah targets over the past week. And we wonder if this is sort of, that's what the new phase that they're on about. Hezbollah did fire mid-range missiles for the first time in this conflict the other morning, almost reaching the northern city of Haifa. So Hezbollah have also said that they're in an open-ended battle. So this is what this new phase appears to be. We don't know what's going to happen next. Obviously, they keep their cards very close to their chest, but there's seriously a scale-up in the number of attacks.
And how are people responding there? Are they leaving where they are from and moving to a safer place?
We're still trying to get an idea of how folks are responding. Lebanon already has well over 100,000 displaced people since the beginning of the conflict. But as strikes get deeper into the country, that might, you know, impact even more people. Our understanding is that there are people who will be leaving soon, but it's still early stages. You know, it was just this morning where the calls were made for residents to leave.
Karim, do they fear it's turning into another Gaza?
I think to a certain extent, the Lebanese people are worried. I think having witnessed what happened in Gaza, the widespread destruction, the crippling of the infrastructure, the humanitarian crisis, you know, and the images of displaced people staying in camps and now, you know, flooding with water right now after the first few rainstorms. Of course, I think their word is this is going to be a prolonged conflict. You know, the last war that happened here between Hezbollah and Israel was in 2006. It lasted 6 weeks. The airport was bombed and it was a difficult situation, but things sort of cleared up pretty quickly. And they're worried that that this war could become regional, which would further prolong it. So, the uncertainty and the possibility of what it could be is definitely making lives very difficult for the Lebanese people, no doubt about it.
And the Lebanese government, I mean, what shape is it in to be able to help its citizens?
not in the best shape, to put it lightly. You know, Lebanon hasn't had a president for several years now. Its government is a caretaker government, which gives it very limited powers. Parliament is extremely divided. And of course, the country's been going through a crippling fiscal crisis for 5 years, which means it relies on NGOs and humanitarian agencies more than ever. Now, there have been officials, you know, the health minister and some others who have really, really, really been working hard to kind of prepare an emergency plan since day one. The problem is the resources. You know, if the country is broke, where are you going to get your money from? And if your electricity grid is barely functional, how are you going to make sure hospitals or if schools turn to shelters get enough power, right? So it's a very difficult situation. And I had spoken with the health minister just over a month ago. And while they're doing all they can, they do concede that there is a funding shortage in the millions of dollars, tens of millions at this point.
And what about Hezbollah? They were weakened surely after what happened last week. Have they been able to regroup? They were firing rockets into Israel over the weekend, most of which were stopped by Israel's Iron Dome system. How strong are they at the moment?
So there's no doubt about it that, you know, even Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah said in his speech a day before the strike in Beirut last Thursday that, yeah, this is a major blow. And other instances where senior officials have been killed, he's admitted. But Hezbollah is a very, you know, complex and bureaucratic institution. So they've lost very important members. But at the end of the day, they say that they have basically regrouped and they will keep fighting. It's obviously unclear. They keep their cards very close to their chest. But, you know, they've continued to fight. We haven't seen much of their arsenal yet. They've introduced new weapons in this conflict, like drones and now these mid-range rockets. But they have lots of, you know, longer range, precise precision-guided missiles, which the Israelis and America has really been concerned about for many years, which they haven't even touched yet. So they said that they're going to keep going. They have refused to de-link their conflict to Gaza. You know, since day one, they've said that we are firing rockets because we want a ceasefire in Gaza. They have not removed that caveat. And they said, as long as there's no ceasefire in Gaza, we will keep firing rockets at Israel. And this is the gridlock that we're in right now.
It is said that they are an organization better armed than many nations in the world. What is the level of support? How would you assess the level of support that they have from the Lebanese people?
Hezbollah has always been a very divisive a militant group organization in Lebanon. Their supporters are very, very loyal to it. You know, given the history of the country, you know, where they initially kind of grew to power when southern Lebanon was occupied by the Israeli military. Hezbollah also have very sophisticated civilian institutions that provide civilian services, mostly for the Shia Muslim population. But its critics are also, you know, their critics are also very harsh in the sense that they also say that, well, Hezbollah has an entire paramilitary force, which, you know, they've questioned whether this violates the sovereignty of the state and so on. So its supporters are extremely loyal and its critics are extremely harsh. And they've become sort of the subject of extreme political division for Lebanon over the past couple of decades.
Karim, good to talk to you again. No doubt we'll talk again. Thank you very much indeed. Karim Shahab there joining us live from Beirut. Well, meanwhile, the President, Michael D. Higgins, the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, and the Taoiseach, the Micheál Martin, they're all at the United Nations in New York this week for a conference called Summit of the Future. Mr. Martin has been speaking to our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan, about the further escalating conflict in the Middle East.
But extreme concern with what is happening right now. How many more people have to be killed? How many more children have to be killed? And innocent civilians before this war stops? And the real worry now, and I'll be attending a high-level meeting this evening with Arab ministers and European ministers, where is this going to go in terms of Lebanon, in terms of the West Bank? The Palestinian Authority has been squeezed in the West Bank. There's more settlements going on there and displacement of Palestinians. You've continuing killing in Gaza. And then you have essentially an intensification of the war in Lebanon with the use of pagers and mobile phones, which is a new technological warfare. And then the regional implications are very real in terms of Jordan, Egypt, and Iran and so on. So the basic message really is to all actors, Israel, Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, to stop in the interests of the people in all of these areas, of the people of the region, innocent people who are not involved in any groups, who want to get on with their ordinary lives. It is quite shocking, the catastrophic conditions in which people are living in at the moment.
Lebanon seems particularly on the brink right now. Are you fearful that Israel may launch some kind of an incursion into Lebanon in response to what Hezbollah are doing?
Well, we are very fearful of escalation. It's unclear as to what Israel will do next. There has been significant increase activity in terms of bombing and in terms of the attacks in the utilization of mobile phones and pagers on that, whether there's a ground incursion or not. But all the signs are that Israel is intent on doing more in Lebanon. The Lebanese situation is very difficult as it is. I mean, you're looking at a failed state, essentially. No government, no proper banking system. And then to have a war on top of that would be extraordinarily difficult for the people of Lebanon, and it must be avoided at all costs.
Ireland obviously has soldiers there with UNIFIL, as do other countries. You were there fairly recently. You know the situation on the ground. What have you been hearing from the army about the situation of the soldiers in Lebanon tonight?
I keep in daily contact with the chief of staff on this and with the military leadership. Our troops are in good form. They're resilient, they're professional. They're obviously monitoring the situation, observing it, and along with all the other troop contributing nations, we work collectively, and we're keeping the situation under constant review and taking all of the force protection measures that are required. But our troops are safe at the moment. They're doing their activities in terms of their role and their mandate. They're professional soldiers, and morale is good right now.
Still on the Middle East, earlier today the president was asked about his letter to the Iranian president. He accused Israel of leaking that letter. The Israeli embassy have denied it in most emphatic terms back in Dublin. What's your understanding of the situation and what's your reaction to what the president said?
Well, first of all, I mean, the letter itself was a standard letter, and in a diplomatic context would be an appropriate letter in terms of a new government coming in. Because diplomacy is the key to ending all of this war and all of this conflict. And in that letter, references are made to peace, the importance of diplomacy to bring an end to conflict, because we appeal to Iran not to escalate the situation in the region, for example. Now, in terms of the circulation of the letter, I'm not aware of who or what or how it emerged, but I think the criticism of the president was unfair in terms of the motivation behind that letter. As I say, it was a standard letter that would issue to many different governments, and diplomacy is not an endorsement of any government or any government's policy. It is really keeping the channels of communication open with these governments. So I'm not in a position to add anything further to what has been said by the president or anybody in relation to that, but I thought the subsequent coverage of the letter was one that I think unfairly criticised the president, and I can see perhaps surmise as to why he made the comments, but that's... You know.
Should those letters not be public as a matter of course?
Oh, yeah,
anyway?
As far as I'm concerned, there's no issue with these letters being sent, and the public ordinarily should be aware of such correspondence, and it's, you know, we write when leaders pass away, for example, or when new leaders are elected, because diplomacy is about keeping channels of communication open. I mean, successive ministers of foreign affairs in Ireland would be in relatively regular contact with Iranian foreign ministers on the nuclear agreement when we were on the Security Council, for example, to try and get them to go back into that GCPO agreement. I was on recently, along with other European colleagues, to press upon Iran the importance of not responding after the death of Hamas leader Hania in Tehran, that it was important that there wouldn't be any response, because we're trying to de-escalate the situation in the region. And the only way you can make those kind of appeals is if you build up relationships and keep the channels of communication open.
That was the Taoiseach, the Micheál Martin, talking there to our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan, in New York. It's 8:27.